morning, and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program on K1 AM 1400 FM 93.3. Our phone lines are open if you have questions or comments for our expert Larry Glass at 1-800-749-5935. Our Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries, United Rentals, Kelly Banks Tree Service, Peter's True Value Hardware. Sharpen your shovels and let's get outside.
And it's time for the Green Country Gardener. It's 8:09 on Saturday, June 19th, 75 degrees. We have sunny skies. If you have any questions for Larry Glass, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. And Larry, how you doing this morning?
Not fine. Well, here comes the heat.
Oh my gosh.
Just as soon as I get used to it.
Yeah.
You guys are gonna let it cool down next week.
It's gonna be cooler a little bit, yeah. Gonna get a little bit of some relief.
Be in the 80s, I'm gonna freeze to death. Oh my gosh, what am I gonna do?
Keep the shovel sharp. Keep going outside.
Well, that's actually one thing we have to do Monday if it does rain, is sharpen our shovels. So anyway, here comes the heat, and watch your plants for heat stress. Not all plants are going to have heat stress. A lot of your annuals are actually tropical plants.
Okay.
And this is a walk in the park for your petunias and your your invasions and stuff, so it shouldn't affect them too much. Just don't let them get too dry. And it's best also to water your plants, say, either early in the morning or, but not during the day, but early in the morning, you know, say 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
It's not so hot then, but
yeah, right.
But try to get it before the sun comes out too much, just so the water has a chance to soak in and you don't waste so much with the evaporation, et cetera, et cetera. So
that makes sense.
So try to water your stuff early in the morning. Typically, when we set our irrigation systems, we let them go at 5, 6 o'clock a.m., whatever, just so that's all out of the way. So when
let it sit for the rest of the day and go do something else.
So anyway, watch your plants. I don't really see very many plants having too much heat stress. We're pretty cool on that. The crepe myrtles, we had some issues with them last winter.
Yes.
And a lot of questions about what do I need to do. At this point in time, they should have sprouted out from the main stem already. If you had a tree form crepe myrtle and the top of it died out. So you just need to basically cut that off.
Okay.
They're kind of sculptural, too, if you've ever seen crepe myrtles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have some in my backyard.
They're kind of pretty. But anyway, the stems that come up need to be cut back. And then let them do what they want to do this summer. Mm-hmm. And then come wintertime, ha, 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 you can selectively choose your better branches to take place of those ones that had died out in the cold last year. Now, that was an anomalous weather pattern. It's something that we really can't plan on, something that happens very rarely. So I wouldn't plan on it happening every year. So,
gotcha.
So actually, your root system is very well intact on the crepe myrtle, and it'll do an awful lot to support that new upper growth. And you'll be surprised how quickly they recover. Because all those roots to feed that little bit of a plant. I got a feeling we're going to have some really nice-looking blooms this year on the crepe myrtles.
Well, I'm excited for it.
Merely because you don't have so much plant to feed. Now it's got a smaller plant, this big root system. And I anticipate a really good show this year.
Okay, awesome.
As far as scale is concerned, I haven't seen a lot of scale on the crepe myrtles yet. Mm-hmm. I have seen, however, some cases of aphids.
Aphids.
On the crepe myrtle. There's one customer where the plants are just shiny with honeydew from the aphids. Just, they look kind of pretty, really, but you look down real close, they're covered in aphids.
What do they look like, the aphids?
They look like little... They're sort of semi-transparent, greenish in color.
Okay.
Translucent, I guess you will. They look sort of like, not silly putty, but...
Well, they are silly, but...
I mean, but they're kind of clearish and greenish in color. And lots of them. And then they exude honeydew, which is a sugary substance. And it attracts other insects, like ants and things, to pass their eggs around, so they can spread very quickly using this symbiosis. So aphids are a bit of a problem, and a solution is Captain Jack's dead bug.
Captain Jack's dead bug.
Otherwise known as a spinosad.
Spinosad.
And it does a very good job to control them, too. So And it's not overly toxic like a lot of insecticides. So that's what I like about it, really. So that's a bit of a problem. And look closely at your crepe myrtles and look for it. And it's not too hard to see. The leaves get just extraordinarily kind of shiny. And then you see these little tiny little insects on there. So,
like, well, that's odd.
Yeah, it's coming on. And another thing, I'm starting to see a lot of scale on the redbud trees.
Okay.
This is stuff I've noticed this year. Redbud scale is pretty bad, too. And the imidacloprid works very well to control that. It's a systemic insecticide, very easy to use. It's a nicotinoid.
Okay.
Not meaning it's made of nicotine or tobacco. It's just how it affects the dinucleotide phosphates in your brain cells of insects. It's unique to insects, though. So it affects the nucleotides in their nervous system. It's
insect brain control.
Yeah. and it keeps them from doing stuff, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, it just halts their actions.
it's like working outside in the heat all day. You just, at the end, you just don't feel like doing anything.
Right.
So that's kind of what it does.
It's too hot.
So the element in this, the chemical in this, doesn't really affect mammals, actually. It's strictly, you know, primarily directed towards insects. And that's insects across the board. The beneficial insects can also have problems with this, too. So you'll want to be very careful about your beneficial insects, such as, say, ladybugs and the monarch butterfly caterpillars, too. So try not to use imidacloprid if you have on areas that have feedstock for butterflies and things, because it can cause some problems.
Okay. We don't want to hurt the butterflies.
Exactly. So, anyway, boxwood mites are another one. I use neem oil on that. It seems to control it real well. Had one just covered in mites. The poor thing was itching. It's just awful. And I used some neem oil on it. They went away.
That's good.
But the mite population can increase just exponentially. In other words, you start out with one, then you got two, then you got four, then 16, and whatever it goes up the scale.
Just, they multiply quick.
And next thing you know, poof.
Like, oh my goodness, we got to take care of this.
Poor plant is out there just itching away trying to survive. So, anyway, so boxwood mites are a problem, and neem oil works very well for that. And powdery mildew is a little bit of a problem on crepe myrtles as soon as the humidity goes and gets some length of day on it. Also, it causes some powdery mildew issues. Humidity is a big problem with that, too, which we've had a lot of humidity. Next week, though, it's supposed to cool down, and I think that really won't be much of a problem with the crepe myrtles.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. So, I really haven't seen much of any bagworms yet this year.
Okay.
We had somebody come in. They thought they had some little bagworms, but the spinosad works very well for that, too. Or what we marketed as Captain Jack's dead bug.
Captain Jack's dead bug.
Works very well against the bagworms. Now, you want to be pretty much proactive on that and try to control them before it happens. So
right.
I use that. Also, BT works very well against bagworms, too.
Gotcha.
So Bacillus thuringiensis works quite well to control bagworms on your plants. You got to be early with it, though, because once they get that cocoon and once a little critter has matured, it's not longer gnawing on your plants, then there's no more control.
Right.
So, you have to be observant. I walk up to people's houses, and I had this kind of sour juniper smell. And I said, you've got bagworms. Well, I don't see them. Well, they're tiny. And you look real close, you can find the little boogers in there. So you want to do what you can to control them.
You're like, oh, trust me, you'll see them soon if you don't
they
start.
They seem to be a little bit late. We seem to have a seasonal latency this year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so they're a little bit late. Typically, we're in the midst of the bagworm season at this point. However, the outbreaks of bagworms at this point are rare. So
that's good.
So watch out.
What are the pests that are causing some problems right now?
Lace bugs on azaleas. You run your hand through your azaleas, and if you see tiny little insects, kind of like miniature little flies, you have lace bugs.
Mm. Yeah.
Lace bugs have a proboscis that penetrates the bottom of the leaf and scrapes out the palisade mesophyll of the leaf. And I saw that look.
Sounds gross.
The mesophyll is that layer between where all the chloroplasts are that do the photosynthesis.
Right.
And they really like that. So you want to, and they will just kind of scrape it out and leave a skeletonized leaf in its place. Now, you can look at the leaf color, and if it starts to get rather pale all of a sudden, then you've got lace bugs. And also look underneath the leaves. There'll be little brown spots where the resins in the leaves have tried to heal up the hole that the little critters made. And you got these little black spots on the bottom.
Right.
So if you have a paling of the leaf and brown spots on the bottom of the leaf, you got lace bugs. But just periodically, just run your hand through them. And if you see this little cloud of insects, you've got lace bugs. Now, what do you do about it? The imidacloprid works for that also. We used to use Dicystone for that, but they took it off the market. But we're now using the imidacloprid as a systemic insecticide for the lace bugs. You can also use neem oil or dormant oil, but not when it's really hot on azaleas, because the leaves don't like the little pores to be plugged up with the oils. They're a little different than some other plants.
Right. Well, lace bugs take a lot.
Yeah, so, and really, the lace bugs cause a weakening of the plant, and it slows down the growth because it can't photosynthesize enough to feed itself. So it loses its ability to grow and all that, and the plant just eventually dies. And then the scale will take over on it and finish it off.
Just one plague after another.
I know. So I haven't really seen a huge outbreak of the lace bugs this year, but typically on a year like we're having right now, they can get really bad. So much of that depressing news.
At least the bagworms aren't around, like you said. Not yet, anyway.
Not
out of the question, but...
Now, oddly enough, though, about a month ago, somebody brought in a branch off of an oak tree, absolutely covered with live scale insects.
Ugh.
And they're not just a typical small ones, they're giant scale insects. I mean, you could crack them open and fry them, they're that big. Let's have them for breakfast, but golly, I mean, that was pretty gross.
Yeah, that is gross.
And, yeah.
Attacking the scales.
So that kind of prompted us to tell people to be aware of this. And you just take a casual inspection of your plants now and then, especially your crepe myrtles. And if you start to see some of these odd little growths, and on your redbuds too, odd little growths on them, little shiny little kind of half egg kind of things on your stick to your branches, then you've got the scale. And control is very easy anymore.
And you're listening to the Green Country Gardener. It's 8:21. If you have any questions about your garden or anything else, you can feel free to call us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. We'll take our first break and we'll be right back with the program.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. I literally had a 73-year-old lady. She came in and wanted to rent one of these track hoes. And she said, do you have one that a lady can operate? A lot of this equipment, it's like a video game. It's hand-eye coordination. This lady came in, rented this track hoe, and dug a trench in front of her house for a French drain that she said she'd been trying to get her husband to do for years. We're up here on the southeast corner of Highway 60 and 75, 3801 Nowa. Water Road, United Reynolds.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters. And arriving, new shipments of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While you're shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants from Green Thumb. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. And remember, Wednesdays are discount days with 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, Sunday, noon to 5.
This is Curtis Bailey, owner of the BNC Automotive Napa Auto Parts Store here in town, and we've been advertising on the radio for several years now, and we have seen results.
Radio gets results. Radio gets results. That's radio.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
And welcome back to the Green Country Gardener. I'm Garrett Giles. Joining us is Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb. It is 823. If you have any questions about your yard or the garden or anything else, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. And we've talked a lot about scales, lace bugs, and other little pests, but now we're going to talk about borers. Larry, what are you seeing on that front?
Borers. What an exciting thing.
Borers.
Boring. Except when it kills your tree.
Yeah, and then it's not so boring.
Borers are an insect that's spread by a moth that flies around and drops an egg in a tree branch, and it bores in there, and the little nymph or larval stage of the insects lives down below the bark and on top of the wood, attacking the phloem layer. Mm-hmm. And that's how they survive. Now, what happens is trees can tolerate some of this bored infestation without really killing them off, because they'll heal up pretty quickly after the critter's come and gone.
Right.
However, it gets to the point where it gets to be an infestation. This little moth tells his brother about it, or his sister, or whomever, and then they all come in and they attack this tree. And how do you know if you have borers in your tree? Well, look at the species of tree to begin with. It pretty much crosses all platforms, really. I've seen them in pistache trees, maple trees, lots of them in maple trees, really. And even elm trees have gotten borers in them, too. And they're different varieties of borers, also, little bitty ones and great big ones and so on. But what you want to look for is, first of all, on the south or the west side of the tree, typically is where they enter.
Okay.
I guess they have a compass on their middle left leg. You know, they got.
Oh my goodness!
this is the west side of the tree. But anyway, that's an adaptive strategy they've done over the years to deposit their eggs in the area where it's the warmest. Typically on the southwest side in the winter. When the sun goes down, it gets a little bit warmer right there. And it's kind of prevalent on maple trees, say, a year or two after it happens, because the maple starts to heal up after the borer damage.
Right.
And the bark pops off a little bit, and revealing an open wound in the tree, if you will.
Hmm.
And then the tree will eventually encapsulate and heal itself if it doesn't get overwhelmed.
Gotcha.
So the borer infestation can be bad on trees that are weaker, that are under stress of some kind, planted in poor rocky soil or something like that, and it causes the sap to be a little sweeter, if you will. And
right.
And they go after those stressed out trees a bit more than the others. So keeping your tree healthy is a good way to prevent that from happening. And what I like to do is not have the grass come right up to the tree, but say put a ring around the tree and maybe have a mulch interface between that. Or it doesn't have to be a metal ring or any kind of structure. It can just be an area where the grass is controlled. Reason for that is the weed eaters go in and they corrupt the bark. And
okay.
That invites them in there, and they come in, and if it doesn't girdle the tree with the weed whacker, the borers find the sap that oozes out when the string trimmer goes in there, and they crawl up and kill the tree that way with their boring action.
So very careful.
So keep the area around the tree clean of grass and all that, just so you don't damage it when you do your trimming around the tree. Also, we've done some commercial properties where we follow through with that, and the trees are very healthy, doing quite well.
Good.
So anyway, that's one way. Another one is, of course, fertilize your trees in the fall, and try not to let them be under stress, say a water stress, at any point in time. And just make them just happy.
Right.
look also at the rate with which your trees are growing. And if they're not growing very quickly, if the node between the leaf, the node is a little place on the stem of the tree where the leaf comes out. And that's what we call a node. And the length of the node between the leaves indicates the speed with which the tree is growing. And if that gets increasingly, the node gets increasingly close together mm-hmm. as the tree grows or as the tree matures, then the tree is under some kind of stress. And it could be from borers, it could be from root wrap from the tree not being properly planted or something like that. Anyway, it's slowed down its growth rate. So that makes it more susceptible to the borers because the tree is under stress. So if that's happening, there's something wrong with the tree. It's either the borers are causing it, or it's just been something wrong with where it's planted or the tree itself. So if the tree is really growing really well, it's a good internode, good long internode, then the tree is fairly healthy, then you don't have too much of a problem with the borers.
So don't stress your trees out. I mean, I think we can all take life lessons from that.
Yeah, just send them birthday cards. And
yeah.
You don't stress them out.
just be sweet, you know.
Yeah. So fertilize them in the spring and fall and don't let them get too dried out. Plant them in the proper place, too. Mm-hmm. Some of the maple trees, they don't like rocky soil. If you've got real rocky soil, you might consider planting a different species of tree. Then it'll be less stressed out. Maples, for the most part, the red maples we have around here are native to lowland areas where the soil is typically deeper and a little richer and more moist, and they tend to do better. Granted, a red maple can survive a drought period rather well, but not a constant drought. Lack of water and the insect infestations will just whittle away at it, and finally it'll just give up.
Right.
So what do we do about borers if we have them? What I mentioned earlier, the imidacloprid is the way to control them. And the spinosad, topical application of spinosad, both of those in conjunction will do a whole lot to stop that from being a problem. And keeping the tree healthy is probably the best thing you can do. And following those practices where you don't weed whack with the trees and so on. You put a little mulch around them to save the moisture and so on. Plant them properly in the proper location. Then they'll do fine.
Be tree smart. Avoid the boar start. That should be your
ooh,
motto.
Oh, yeah. Good
How
one.
That?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, anyway.
What else should people be knowing about trees?
Tomatoes, from what I've seen in people's tomatoes, they're doing pretty well. The hot weather doesn't seem to be bothering them at all. There is some humidity associated with our hot weather we're having this year, but it doesn't seem to be causing much of any problems.
That's good.
So I don't see a lot of fruit out yet. So mine at home are just kind of, they're growing real fast.
Growing fast tomatoes.
I grow them in containers with electronic drip system on them.
You know those drip systems.
And they do very well. So and they're growing real fast. So and I do have some tomatoes on the vine. They're just not ready yet.
Good.
So blossom end rot can be a bit of a problem if we have a lot of humidity and heavy soil and so on. The plant there might be a deficiency in calcium, which a lot of times causes a problem with blossoming rot. Mm-hmm. pH could be a problem too. They do like a fairly low pH, 6.5. So if your tomatoes are just kind of growing, but they're not really, they just don't look robust, perhaps you might have a pH issue with it. Our soil here tends to run a little alkaline in nature. And then you have a plant, you introduce a plant that lacks a kind of a lower pH, then it could cause some production problems with your tomato plants. So I like to use Epsom salts on it.
Okay.
When you do your ground prep in the wintertime for your tomatoes.
Epsom salts.
Nobody does that.
Nobody does it? Well, they should.
They should. Yeah, that's when you really want to do your ground prep, because that freezing and thawing really helps loosen up that soil. So you want to get your ground ready in fall, and then I add some gypsum and some Epsom salts, and they seem to do very well with that. So, we have some problems with mites on the tomatoes, and the spinosad is very safe to use for that.
Right.
Control mites and things. So, and aphids are a little bit of a problem too with people's tomatoes this year. So that'll help that a lot too. Blossom end rot, like I mentioned earlier, is primarily a calcium deficiency, and typically it's associated with heavy soil. And But the tomatoes are doing rather well.
Yeah. Aside from those things, they're right. Doing fine.
Now, that leads us kind of up into annuals. And golly, I like to plant sun coleus and hibiscus. Make really good annuals, too. Big blooms all summer long. Lantana, periwinkles, begonias, et cetera, Mexican heather. They're kind of a vital part in the landscape. They add color all summer. You don't get a full amount of color all summer from typically from shrubs, such as azaleas or crepe myrtles. There's times in which they're in bloom, and it's not typically not a very long span. Now, you could do a landscape composition that involves several different varieties of flowering plants that bloom at different times. I did one yesterday and presented it where we had forsythias and smoke trees and then burning bush and crepe myrtle and Rosa Sharon. So there's always something going on there from spring to fall.
Right.
So it was in an area that's way away from the house, so you needed something big and dramatic to just be able to see it.
Yeah.
So we did a composition that involved all of that, and I think it'll be a very nice-looking thing. And also you want to consider wintertime, too, some evergreen plants, so little hollies or dwarf pines or Mughal pines or something like that, that'll give you some winter interest as well, just so it's not so bleak with nothing there at all in the wintertime. So as far as shrubs blooming, annuals just bloom all the time. Shrubs bloom at different times. Perennials typically bloom at different times, with the exception maybe of balloon flower and scabiosa. Mm-hmm. And that leads us into the balloon flower. It's an interesting plant called platycodon.
Platycodon. Oh, my goodness.
And this plant... it's interesting, though, the flowering, the progression of the bloom is kind of interesting. And it blooms real well here, actually. We've got some customers who got them all over their yard. They kind of spread around, too, but they're really quite pretty. Amongst the perennials, they're blue. They're pink ones, too, and white ones, but I like the blue ones because they show up real nice.
Yeah.
Blue flowers are not very common in the landscape, with the exception maybe of scabiosa and some salvias and things. But to get a big bloom like this and have it blue is very nice. Mm-hmm. So we do have some of those balloon flowers, they're called, because when the flowers come out, they're this pentagonal-shaped balloon, if you will. Mm-hmm. And then they pop open, revealing the blue color or the pink or the white color of their flower petals. They stay in bloom for about a week, but they put on more and more pretty much all summer long there. One of those that blooms for a long period of time. So there are some perennials like that. The perennial lantana blooms all summer long. The butterflies really like that, as do the hummingbirds. Mm-hmm. And, the scabiosa is another one. It blooms pretty much all summer, too, and it's available in blue and pink. Okay. So a lot of these perennials, some of them do actually bridge the gaps and bloom for a long time. Some of them just have this time frame. So you want to do your perennial composition with that in mind, the fourth dimension. You can't, I like these flowers, I like those flowers, and da da da. But if they all bloom at the same time, you don't get much of a show for a very long period of time. You get a big show for some time, but not for the whole summer. So you want to put some variability in the blossom times. And we can help you with that at the nursery. You can walk around and say these bloom in the spring, the midsummer, and fall, and so on and so on. Yeah. So you get kind of a constant show of perennials. And also in a flower bed composition, such as one you'd use for perennials, you do want to introduce some annuals in there, just to bridge maybe a gap in the time frame in which the perennials bloom.
Awesome. That's really neat.
Yeah. So cool. Yeah. The daylilies are starting to come in right now. Some of them have been open for a little while, and some of them are a little later. Mine in my backyard, they're late.
Yeah.
Either that or I missed them, maybe.
There's a number of factors there.
Anyway, they're starting to show up. And the Stella Doro daylily is a very popular one, because it blooms for an extended period of time in the summertime. I really like this plant, too. It seems to be a bit more disease-resistant than a lot of the older ones. Mm-hmm. And it forms a larger clump as time goes on. So those summer-blooming varieties of the daylilies, they bloom for a long period of time, and they're very reliable.
Right.
However, they do tend to crowd themselves out. So about every 3 years, you got to divide them.
Right.
So they don't crowd, don't crowd the mushrooms, but they need some leg room in order to draw up enough resources to bloom.
Right.
So they have to be divided on occasion. So, and there are several colors of this summer, quote, ever blooming, unquote, or Stella Doro type crepe myrtle, or daylilies.
Right.
So we're not just stuck on one particular color. There's several different colors available. So.
We're talking with Larry Glass. You're listening to the Green Country Gardener Program. It's 8:38. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
You've heard it said. I saw it on the radio.
Well, that's true.
But now the radio can be your computer,
your smartphone,
tablet, or any internet-connected device.
Go to BartlesvilleRadio.com and click on the Listen Now button in the upper right-hand corner.
And you won't miss a minute of news, sports, or entertainment.
You can take us with you anywhere in the world.
We're AM 1400, FM 93.3, K1, the one you trust, and your constant online companion.
Building healthy relationships is often a difficult, lifelong process, but you can find health and hope in just 1 minute. Focus on the Family Minute is sound marriage, parenting, and personal growth advice from today's leading experts, plus encouragement and insight from your favorite authors and Christian personalities. Focus on the Family Minute. It could change your day, your perspective, maybe even your life.
Brought to you by Grace Community Church, weekday mornings at 7:40 on 1400 K1.
How many times have you asked yourself, what's the forecast for tomorrow? Just call the Weatherline Forecast Service, 918-336-2900, and find out. You get the forecast, plus the time and temperature from the studios of News Talk 1400 K1. The Weatherline is brought to you by Oklahoma Wesleyan University. We update the Weatherline as our forecast changes, so you're always up to date. Put that number in your phone and call 918-336-2900.
It's June and time to celebrate Dad. Peters True Value has their Father's Day sale going on. For the guy who loves to do house painting projects, treat Dad to a free 3-pack Best Brush Painting Set when you buy any gallon of Easy Care Ultra Premium Paint, Easy Care Platinum Paint, or Easy Care Woodsman Exterior Stain. A $16.49 value. Limit one free 3-pack per household, but only at Peters True Value in Dewey.
We're back with the Green Country Gardener, Larry Glass, joining us in studio. If you have any questions for him, call us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. We've been talking about some annuals and perennials. Larry, what else should people know about that?
Well, trees, actually.
Okay.
Container and bald and burlap trees can be planted about any time. You just really can't move them at this time of the year. And generally... I see a lot of this with people. They plant trees too deep in the ground, and it causes root rot. So you don't want that.
I'm out. Nope.
And that'll knock them out real quick. So you want to make sure a lot of these plants do have instructions on the label as to how to plant a tree. It's pretty simple and basic, really. You dig a hole as deep as the root ball is tall. Not necessarily not the pot, but the root ball.
Right.
Yeah, so a lot of times there's a lip on the top, which helps retain water when they're out in the tree field. These tree growers, they have trees, the rows can be miles long, mm-hmm. all the way down. And how do you water all that? There's these big overhead sprinkler heads. And then they fill up this dish in the pot. And it acts as a water reservoir to help... Then the rest of the water runs down the hill, goes into a pond, and they pump it back up the next day. But you don't want to plant it as deep as the top of the pot, but you do want to plant it as deep as the root ball itself. And if anything, maybe a little up above it, actually, a mounding effect, if you will. Just so the trees, our soil here is naturally kind of heavy, and just so they don't sit underwater too long and cause the root system to deteriorate. Mm-hmm. Decompose or rot, if you will. It's called root rot. How do you know if you have root rot? The tips of the leaves typically get black and have just dried up in a specific further area out from the leaf. And also the newly emerging leaves are characteristically smaller, and they'll have that black edge around them too without the cells die off. The tree's trying to survive, and if it can't transpire enough because the root ball is missing, it slows it down by killing off some of the leaf. It's interesting adaptive strategy for these plants.
Yeah.
For them to survive, they try everything they can.
Crazy survival.
So anyway, that's characteristic of root rot. Now, there's another thing that happens with leaves, especially around here. It's called wind tatter. And the ends of the leaves really aren't completely dead, but they're kind of shredded on the tips. And that's usually when we have a lot of wind. And some of the red buds are susceptible to that. Japanese maples are susceptible to wind tatter. So if we've had a lot of wind, and we have had some, but not a whole lot this year. It's been a very mild spring, really.
Yeah, for the most part.
But in some areas, the wind can be concentrated. And it causes wind tatter on the leaves. But that's why when you're doing commercial plantings downtown or something, you want to be aware of that and plant in trees that don't have that problem so they look nice. Now, susceptible plants are Japanese maples and red buds, and some other plants with, say, bigger leaves tend to wind tatter. Now, the Merlot red bud has a less of a tendency to wind tatter than the forest pansy red bud, the purple-leaved ones. And the Oklahoma red bud has a less of a tendency to do that than the regular red bud because of the density of the leaf.
Right.
It tends to, it's a bit more turgid, if you will, and it doesn't flap around like a flag in the wind, you know. So anyway, kind of off the cuff.
Oh, you're good.
So anyway, so it's not confuse or root rot with wind tatter. That's the point I'm making. It's root rot is associated with the blackening of the leaves and leaf loss, yellowing of some of the leaves. And wind tatter is just the tips of the leaves are just kind of torn on the edge a little bit. Happens a lot when you put them in the back of the truck, too, and
down the road going down fast. 60 miles an hour down the road.
Yeah, sometimes when we plant one in an area that's far away, we'll put the tree in the truck backwards.
Okay.
And then the wind shadow from the cab of the truck will stop it, keep it from tattering. So when it comes to people's house, it doesn't look like something shredded.
Hey, what happened to the tree in the back of your truck?
And they
there,
say,
Larry?
Why did it take you so long? Well, I can only go 30 miles an hour with this tree.
Right.
So anyway, so that's kind of the difference between root rot and wind tatter is the condition of the perimeter of the leaf. So that's kind of, and also we really don't have much of a problem with leaves or trees being stressed out by the heat. They can take it real well. They transpire. As long as the root system's intact and everything else, they can take it just fine. Mm-hmm. No problems with the heat. Okay. Shrubs, there are so many varieties available out there. Containerized shrubs can be planted anytime. And we do a lot of landscaping in the summertime, and be sure to water them properly and allow the surface to dry out a little bit between waters. The biggest question I get is, how often do I water? And my stock answer is, I don't know.
How could we?
I get the strangest looks.
Harry, come on.
Typically, you want to observe the soil because it's going to be different. People have different percolation rates in their soil. They have different soil types and so on. Their irrigation system behaves differently from one to another. Mm-hmm. The rate of precipitation is a little bit different. So you want to basically just water when the surface gets a little on the dry side. And it really doesn't hurt a plant to wilt a little bit from being too dry. That's not bad. It actually makes the root system grow a little faster down deep to establish itself better. It has to seek out the water.
Okay.
And if you keep it constantly wet, there's no reason for the tree to really go out and exploit the area. It doesn't need to.
Right.
So it puts everything in the top, and then it gets really dry, and the plant just goes.
And it's over.
Well, what happened? Well, the roots didn't develop properly because you watered it too much. So when I plant something in my house, it's got to really want the water before I water it again. So, and then when you water it very deeply, so the water goes through the root ball into the soil down below. Another thing you can do to prevent the watering frequency, if you will, is to mulch it real heavily on the surface. Mm-hmm. And that'll stop the evaporation of the water through the top of the root ball on the tree or the shrub that you plant. So it doesn't dry out due to the wind and the sun and the heat as quickly. A lot of the water is preserved by maintaining a mulch layer on the top.
Gotcha.
So follow those simple rules and basically water it when it wilts. And when you do water it, just put the hose on, let it run. And I tell people, water them in the morning.
Gotcha.
And so what's the difference? Well, the hose is not hot in the morning. So when the water comes through.
You're nice and cool.
Nice and cool, yeah. I've seen that happen where the hose is sitting out there in the sun and they just come outside at 3 in the afternoon because the tree is a little bit limp, turn on the water. well, this 200-degree water comes out there.
It's like a scalding shower in the middle of summer and then, outside.
And then, it causes the tissues in the roots to collapse, and it can't take up any water.
Right.
So basically the tree dies out. So you want to, that's why I say water in the morning. Or at least leave the hose coiled up in the shade. And then if you do have to water during the day, stand there and let it run. Spray it on the grass. It'll cool down by the time it hits the ground.
Right.
If you don't burn your thumb in half, then...
Oh, I see bone.
That's when this hot water, I'm cooked. And then let it run through before you water your plant. Then it'll be all right.
We're talking with Larry Glass, Green Country Gardener Program, on your radio dial. It is 8:48 on Saturday, June 19th. We'll be right back with more of the show after this.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is your plant headquarters, and arriving new shipments of annuals, perennials, shrubs, and trees. While you're shopping for outside the home, make it a tropical paradise inside with tropical plants from Green Thumb. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road, home to Bartlesville's largest plant selection. And remember, Wednesdays are discount days with 10% off regular priced items. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday 9 to 5, Sunday, noon to 5.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000.
1-8-335-7000. Hi, I'm Todd Starnes, host of the Todd Starnes Show. I hope you join me weekdays at 1 o'clock right here on K1, the one you trust at AM 1400 and FM 93.3. Tune in for an honest conversation and, of course, my commentaries on the events of the world around us. Fresh, honest, and unafraid, it's the Todd Starnes Show with me, Todd Starnes. Weekdays at 1 on K1, the one you trust.
What if the music stopped? If the familiar voices were silenced? If there were no breaking news updates? What if your companion and connection to your community came with a monthly fee? Don't worry, we're free local radio with you wherever you go. Celebrating 100 years and looking forward to the next 100. We are broadcasters. Text radio to 52886 and let Congress know you depend on your local TV and radio stations. This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. I am Garrett Giles. We got Larry Glass with us. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Larry, what should people be knowing about the lawn?
The lawns, your mower should be pretty high at this point, 2 to 2.5 inches or so Bermuda grass, and about 3 inches on the fescue, about 2 inches or so on the zoysia grass. If you've got some weeds in your yard, use a quinclorac. It works pretty good to control weeds on Bermuda and zoysia, but not on your fescue at this point. So you're stuck with the weeds on your fescue if you got it. Also, you want to maintain your fertilizing on your Bermuda grass and zoysia. I believe we got some rain scheduled for this week. So perhaps tomorrow afternoon would be a good time to maybe get some fertilizer out there on the grass before the rain hits. And not a heavy fertilization, you just want to maintain it. You really don't want the grass to get weak when it gets really dry. You want it to be good and strong and healthy and all that. And starving it is not necessarily a way to keep it from growing. So we got a caller, do we? Or?
We do, yes.
Okay, put them on.
Good morning. How can we help
Hi.
You?
Hi. Good morning. Got a question about my drip irrigation system.
Yes.
I put it in, this will be the fourth summer that I've had it in, fourth season.
Right.
And the performance of the thing seems to be degrading as I go. You got any suggestions? And also, how far? I'm thinking about extending it to another part of the yard, uh-huh. in the flower beds.
Right.
How far can I go with it? in terms of feet.
Performance loss could be caused by maybe a regulator, perhaps, that's plugged up or just worn out. You know, they use a little rubber diaphragm in there to regulate the water, and could just need a, if you don't have a regulator on it, that's probably not the cause, but a lot of people do put them on there so they can get about 25 PSI of water on it. So check that out, and if you can, bypass it and see if it still works. So that'd be the first thing.
Okay.
Secondarily would be, of course, the filter, looking at that too. And also, what's your static water pressure? Has it changed? It can vary depending on, you know, which way the city's growing and where you're located, all that too. So there's a lot of factors on that. So those are the factors I would look for first. Chances are everything south of the valve that operates it, if it's automatic or not, or the everything south of the regulator should be okay. It's pretty simple. But it sounds like it's an input device somehow. It could even be the faucet on the wall too. Some of them have these little aerator things that, and I've run into some of those also on a house that it was just totally almost plugged up. There's aerator on the end of your, it's kind of a backflow preventer thing too. And the only way to fix those is just to get another one screwed on there.
Okay. All right, good enough. And how far do you think that I can go? I've got a 50-foot section of drip irrigation line right now, but I left a male end on with a cap on it so I can add more to it.
Right.
How far do you think I can go?
Well, that's the big factor is how much consumption do your heads have, and the length of pipe and all that. And your available water pressure and volume of water too. So there's some factors in that. There's no tried and true way to determine how much you can put on there without some input data, such as your available PSI and your flow, and pipe size.
Okay.
If you're running a half inch pipe, you probably don't want to put any more than say maybe 15 or so drip heads on there, depending on how they're dripping and all that.
Okay. All right.
So first thing that I would do is take the drip system off the faucet and turn on the water, and see if there's an irregular stream coming out, or just seems like it's running really, really slow. So it could be the backflow preventer on your faucet if you have one.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much.
Very good. Thanks
Appreciate
for calling.
It. Mm-hmm. Good show. Keep up the good work.
Appreciate it.
Have a
Thank
great
you.
Day, guys. Uh-huh. Bye.
Larry, I think we'll take our final break. We'll be right back.
Okay, cool.
In 1930, Frank Phillips received a very special gift from some very dear friends. During a ceremony surrounded by 1,500 guests, Frank was adopted into the Osage tribe by Chief Fred Lookout and given the name of Eagle Chief by the Osage. This marked the first time that the Osage had ever adopted a white person into their tribe. Chief Lookout gave the newest Osage chief the gift of a pony, a saddle, and a single eagle feather. The saddle had been in Lookout's family for over 100 years. Frank Phillips received a telegram from a famous man and dear friend saying, "Sorry I can't make it. The Osage were always the smartest Indians in America. There are 120 million white men, and they pick out the best one to make an Osage chief. Best regards to all Osages, including Frank, from the renegade Cherokee, Will Rogers." That kind of magic still happens every day at Willow Rock. Welcome home to Willow Rock.
Thank you to everyone who participated in this year's 2021 Dad Deserves It contest.
This is Todd.
And congratulations to Todd McCarty, this year's grand prize winner.
Here's what you've won. Two-night stay courtesy of Meyer Hotels property at the Comfort Inn at Thousand Hills. A pair of tickets to the Grand Jubilee at Grand Country Music Hall. A pair of tickets to the Clay Cooper Country Express. A pair of tickets to the world's largest toy museum, all in Branson. Plus, our local prizes, which includes a $50 gift certificate from Wendell's Rock and Jewelry, $50 Visa card from Truity Credit Union, stainless steel ID bracelet from McCoy Jewelers, candy bouquet from Flowerland, $25 gift card from Blue Stem Body. If you're hungry, 10 gift certificates for your choice of 2 breakfast items from Sal's Daylight Donut.
He's everything a man could be.
He's the best dad, of course.
Thank you for all the support through the years.
That's what dads do right there.
Thank you.
Happy Father's Day.
From Bartlesville Radio.
And welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Welcome to the final segment. We're with Larry Glass. Larry,
hey,
any final thoughts?
At the nursery, we've got a great selection of annuals still. And they're really top-notch looking plants, too. So come and check it out. We have a wide variety of perennials and some annuals, too, that the hummingbirds and the butterflies like. Cool. We planted some milkweeds at the nursery to help the monarchs a little bit. And we have a little habitat for the monarch butterflies at there that we raise the caterpillars.
There you go.
To grow in the butterflies. So that's kind of fun. We got a lot of customers who really like to follow that and check out our butterfly tent thing. They really kind of like that,
that
too.
That is neat, yeah.
So we've got a lot of that going on at the nursery, too. We got actually we've cordoned off some areas. We've had a killdeer bird. Lay an egg over there, so we got a section cordoned off so nobody can bother their little nest. So
that's
it's
cool
funny
too.
How they come at you with their little wings and squawk at you when you come close to their nest. So anyway, we got a lot going on at the nursery.
Right.
We're doing landscaping as fast as I can, doing retaining walls, sprinkler systems, shrubs, trees, and sod. We're very, very busy right now. And golly, you should see my schedule today. I'm busy, busy, busy.
Yeah.
So we're doing doing a lot of work at the nursery and try to keep everything green.
yeah.
So come on by and check it out. Check out our annuals, our perennials, and make your yard beautiful again.
And where are you guys located at?
4605 Nowater Road, halfway between Madison and Washington Boulevard on the south side of the road.
All right.
So
and
we'll talk to you next week. Have a great week. And by all means, keep that shovel sharp.
That was your Green Country Gardener Program. 77 degrees. News is next.
For residential and commercial plumbing, call Mason's Plumbing. We're serving you as their priority.